You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, SFU Burnaby.
When I think about Afghanistan, I think about two things. My old J-school friend Nellafor Prazira, and the footage of a plane lifting off a tarmac with Afghans clinging to the side and falling to their deaths. Nellafor was in my journalism class years ago, and she's written about a half a dozen books and hundreds of articles about Afghanistan since. But the first time she described growing up there, I was surprised. It was so different from what I'd seen on the news. She remembers picnics in a park near her home in Kabul, women with and without veils mixing freely on the streets of urban areas. In Afghanistan, the number of women attending Kabul University increased every year, as did the number of women in politics, medicine, and sports. All that changed in 1978, the year Nellafor says her childhood ended. You know the well-worn list of conflicts that's unraveled since then. The Soviet invasion, the war with the Mujahideen and Al-Qaeda, then the rise of the Taliban. One night, Nellafor's father turned off all the lights in her house, and they just left in the dark, walking most of the 400 miles to the Pakistan border. I was thinking about that reversal of human rights when Canada joined the coalition in Afghanistan in 2001. More than 40,000 Canadians would serve over 12 years in Afghanistan, the largest deployment of Canadian troops since the Second World War. And as much of that mission was about geopolitics and stabilizing the region, it was also about human rights. Canada spent $2.2 billion to rebuild things the country had lost during decades of war: food security, electricity, roads, basic health services, and schools. There was this glimmer, this moment, where people who'd been forced into lives without freedom were being emancipated. A young generation, knowing only whispers of freedom from tales their grandparents told, could reimagine their future. But when Canada departed Afghanistan in 2014, the Taliban and Al-Qaeda insurgencies were destabilizing the government and threatening the population. And so when I saw that footage in 2021, people clinging to the outside of that plane, who does that? I kept thinking, what are they running away from that's worse than that? What was happening inside Afghanistan? Then, out of all the newsrooms and all of Canada that she could have walked into, Molly Thomas walked into mine. Wait for it.
So there are there's hundreds of people here. Look like Afghans. There must be something happening. Rashid, why don't we drive up and then we will walk back? So we're just walking up to the Afghan embassy. It's a very busy place. We're not expecting this. The last time you heard from me, I was trying to get into Afghanistan. Well, that didn't work out because the Taliban rejected me. So here I am at an Afghan embassy. I chose to come here. To Pakistan. A country arguably as complex and potentially dangerous as Afghanistan. It hosts the most Afghan refugees in the world. I meet a man named Fayez standing on the sidewalk on my way towards the embassy. So what are you waiting for today, sir?
I'm here to get my marriage certificate. Afghans are here to get their marriage certificate, get their passport extension, their singleness certification, those papers.
You have to have a singleness certificate too?
I don't need it, but my wife needs it, yeah.
Okay.
So I have to get...
Now that I'm closer, I can see there are hundreds of men trying to push their way to the front of the line.
Okay, so the crowds kind of tell you how many Afghans are living here. There's a lot.
Yeah, approximately maybe more than 2 million Afghans.
Yeah, I've heard even 4 million, yeah, right?
2 million or 4 million? That's a huge discrepancy. The truth is, with a porous border and members of the Pashtun community on both sides, nobody really knows. Even the UN and Pakistan have conflicting figures about Afghan refugees. The stats average out to roughly 4 million Afghans here.
So most of the Afghans right now living here, their finance support comes from outside of Pakistan. So their families who live in Canada, USA, America, they support them. Financially, they support them.
And have you been here for a long time?
I've been here for a year and a half.
Okay.
Yeah.
So newer arrival?
Yeah. I'm new here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Thank you.
I realize we're the only women in the crowd. Are the men staring at us because of that? Or because we have recording equipment? I quickly tuck my Zoom mic in my bag. You can barely see it, but I am still recording.
I think I'll go and just kind of collect some sound. We can both collect sound first.
Yep.
And then just
the crowds and stuff.
Yep.
Oh, that's Riley. She's a friend and former colleague. We met at CTV's W5 a few years back. I've always admired the types of stories she's chased, from exploitation in the porn industry to the sexual abuse of female athletes in gymnastics. So when she volunteered to come on this trip, it was a no-brainer. We're hoping to talk to a Taliban member. I mean, why not? We couldn't get into Afghanistan. This might be the closest we can get. On my first day in Islamabad, I met Haya, a 21-year-old Afghan girl.
These are the Afghan kebab, the Sikh kebab we call it.
And what makes like a Afghan kebab different than a kebab you find in Turkey or like another country?
Perhaps it's the sticks that we make the kebab with, or perhaps the way we marinate the kebab because we have special ways, and the way we cook it because we cook it with coal and stuff.
And you burn it a little bit.
We burn it a little bit, yeah. We like it burned.
Haya is my guide and translator today, helping me navigate this very Afghan neighborhood in Islamabad.
Assalamu alaikum. Khub astin? Khair khairat? Bali. She says, are you reporters?
Learning about Afghan culture.
Haya is only able to walk around this area freely because she has the most important paper for any Afghani in Pakistan. A visa.
When you have visa, you can walk freely everywhere, especially this area, because this is more like Afghans are staying here. So the police checkups and, you know, the patrols and stuff, they happen here quite often.
If you don't have a visa, you could be dragged onto a truck and immediately deported back to Afghanistan. Pakistani police prowl the streets. Many Afghans without visas are in hiding. They know if they get caught, their dream to come to Canada, the U.S., Australia, well, it's over. But how long can they actually hide? Pakistan is not a country that you mess with. It's essentially run by the military. It's a high surveillance hotspot. That means you're watched almost everywhere you go. And the topic of Afghan refugees is, well, sensitive. On one hand, Pakistan has been a refuge for Afghans during multiple wars. On the other, It's housed, helped, and financed the Taliban, fueling its rise to power and the most recent wave of displacement. Everyday Pakistanis have strong feelings about the influx of Afghans in their country.
For a long time, we never had a border with Afghanistan. They are doing business. They are like our friends also. But recently, there are many Afghanis who are like not even registered here. All Pakistani government wants, we should know who is in Pakistan.
But actually, there were a lot of robberies going around. That was the time that people went against them. The thieves, they come out to be Afghanis living in tents and everywhere. So that is the thing that piques the hatred amongst the local people.
How they are behaving with them is not good. They are telling them they should leave the country and go out is not good. They should give them a resident to stay here also.
So not deporting these people.
Women are suffering there too much, I know. But they should give them also security, everyone. We are all human beings and God created all of us.
Does this in any way, like, remind you of Kabul?
It does remind you of home. Everyone is Afghan here, so it would give you a sense of home, but not really home.
Not quite.
Not quite, no.
So this, I think we take a left here. Let's try it. Yeah. Definitely looks a little different than Islamabad. A little more densely populated. There's like rickshaws in the street. We pass small shops that look like dilapidated jigsaw puzzles. People are peddling oranges and apples on carts. The area is poor. Children are begging for money in the streets. We're here because I've heard about a young girl named Marwa with a very unique story. It's unique because she was granted a visa to come to Canada. That would have offered a new life in a new country, an opportunity to walk the streets freely, to escape the shadow of war, to study and to work in whatever she wants, what most Canadians take for granted. She had that visa, but her family took her name off that list. I have to find out why. We can't tell you exactly where we are because we want to protect young Marwa. Riley is with me, and our local translator, Haya, is here too. She's roughly around the same age as Marwa. Finally, we find Marwa's place. I can't shake the eyes of the young men watching us. There's at least four idling around the stairwell. We start making our way up to the third floor. We walk into what feels like a big closet, a single room, not much bigger than a few parking spots. This is Marwa's home. This tiny space is where she eats, sleeps, and hides away from the world. She's a bit shy.
And this is my first time to I talk English with someone.
Your English is quite good.
But I think it's not good.
Marwa is a sweet-looking girl with a round face. Her conservative clothes hide her figure, but as she speaks to me, she's nervously adjusting her pink hijab.
I think I know English, but when I talk to someone, I didn't know how to talk because there is no one I practice with them.
Surprisingly, this young woman has taught herself English through YouTube. She's only 20 years old, and she's alone in this country.
Do you know people around here?
No, there's the first floor, there is all single boys.
Okay.
And on this next and third floor, there is a families.
Their families. Mm-hmm. And are there any other single women?
No.
No, just you.
Marwa grew up near Kandahar, a very traditional area in southern Afghanistan. You may remember it because Canada had its largest military base there during the war. At home, Marwa would never leave the house without a brother or an uncle by her side. She'd never make decisions for herself without family input. Independence for her is terrifying.
Alone life is not good for a lady in Pakistan, in Afghanistan. It's good on Canada, America, Europe, countries, but no one can do it here.
So is it safe for you to walk around the area?
No, it's not safe.
That's because the one time she tried to get groceries, she was mugged by two Pakistani men. They stole a precious gift her mother had given her.
Someone here stole those gold bangles?
Yeah, stolen my bangles. Stolen my bangles, my money, and also my passport. Then I cried too much aloud, and then they gave me only my passport.
So for the most part, you are just living within these four walls?
Yeah.
If you don't feel safe to go outside, how do you eat? How do you get the basic necessities that you need?
It's too much hard. I talk sometimes with our plaza security guard, and I told him, I give you money and then you bring me some things for me. He's a good man. He bring me some things for a week.
The only time she leaves her apartment, she says, is to renew her visitor visa. But to do that, she has to travel to the Afghan border to get an exit and re-entry stamp every 3 months. This is why her passport was so important.
How long does it take you every time you have to go back to the border?
It's 24 hours came from Pakistan to Afghanistan. It takes 24 hours.
And how? How do you move?
Yeah, it's too much hard. On the bus, there is all men, and there is Pakistani armies come to bus every all of the night, 7 times, 8 times. So the Pakistani armies take money from me.
Marwa claims it's a shakedown on the bus, where she has to pay up to stay in the country.
So they take money from you?
Yeah.
That's the only way that you get to keep moving?
Yeah, that is just only the way that I save myself from the jail of Pakistan.
Marwa's life did not have to be like this. Most of her immediate family is not in Afghanistan. They are in Canada.
Next stop.
So I just got off the bus, and I am in an area northeast of Toronto. I didn't know if they're in a home or an apartment, but guessing by this street, there's only one option. Looking at a lot of kind of run-down apartments, you know, places where you can see that there's not really blinds in the windows. There's a lot of Muslim women around me wearing the hijab, just based on the demographics of the bus, and people walking around the streets. Looks like a very heavily populated refugee and immigrant community. Probably people just starting off their life in Toronto. I'm here today trying to track down Marwa's family. I walked around a little bit, almost missed it. Found it. We are here. Like your sister.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I can see it. I can see it.
Yeah.
That's
Assalamualaikum.
And this is another sister?
Yeah.
Okay, hi, I'm Molly.
She is my young sister.
The youngest sister?
Yes.
Yeah.
Marwa also has a nephew she's never met. Her older sister, Asma, gave birth after coming to Canada.
We have bought a tea and milk. Which one do you prefer?
The tea with milk is good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Marwa's brother. Who was a cleaner for the Canadian Army in Afghanistan, is extremely shy. And he hasn't learned English yet. But his older sister, Asma, is fluent, so I'm chatting with her.
I met her sister. She's a lovely girl. We were just like twins.
I'm about to ask the question that has been haunting me ever since I left Islamabad. Why was Marwa's name taken off that Canadian visa list? I'll admit, it's awkward. I even feel weird asking it.
So Asma, take me back to August 2021, because I'm trying to understand why you're on this side of the world and she's on the other side of the world.
I wish she was not engaged. She was single.
She wanted to come with us because my brother was working with Canadian Army and we need to leave the country. But unfortunately, her husband was warning us, you can take her to Canada with your family.
When the Taliban took over Afghanistan, Marwa was engaged. Now, it's not the same as in Canada. These religious commitments that involve both families are tough to break. We talked to Marwa about it in Pakistan.
At the time when these visas came from Canada, you were very young.
Yeah, at that time I was very young. I was 17, yeah.
17. Let that sink in. She hadn't even finished high school.
Yeah, I was engaged and also I was on nikah.
Sorry, what does that mean?
Nikah means that Islam, that when one boy and girl come on relationship.
Haya, my guide and translator, steps in to help me understand the culture.
Well, nikah is like Islamic marriage. We call it marriages in Islam, in countries like Afghanistan and Pakistan, in Islamic countries, the marriage is basically called nikah. But it's not like in a relationship. It's like she didn't know her husband of the time. It's just like Islamic marriage.
So like that, like if you're in it, you are married?
Yes.
So getting married at 17 to someone that you've never seen before, was it your choice?
No, this is my family choice.
Sadly, this is very normal in Afghanistan. Almost 30% of girls are married off before the age of 18.
These are some good things. I mean, look at first position in MSXL class, women's leadership development. You're a smart girl.
No, that's not.
A once promising student, Marwa dreamed of becoming a pilot one day. But school was no longer an option now that she was basically married and expected to produce children.
And when you got married at 17, how old was your husband at that time?
At that time, 31.
Yeah. So yeah, 12, 13 year difference. It's drastic.
Yeah, I was a child.
Marwa had her childhood ripped away. Staunch religious traditions further complicated her life. Remember, this was all happening when Afghanistan was crumbling, falling into the hands of the Taliban. Because she was engaged, she had no choice but to stay in Afghanistan. She shows me her Canadian family visa from 2021. I can see her mother's name, her brother's name, her sister's, and there it is, her name. She says her future husband's family threatened violence if her name was not struck from that list.
So you had an opportunity to come to Canada, and you're telling me that your future in-laws basically said, no, you're not leaving.
Yeah, I have opportunity. We have opportunity. My mom, my brother, my two sisters, and I, we had a visa. There is a special family visa that there is a written by Canadian people that this family or these names are allowed to Canada and they can come.
Do you feel like you missed your chance to come to Canada?
Yeah, I missed my chance.
Marwa's family got on that plane to Canada in 2021, leaving her behind in Afghanistan. What came next was worse. She alleges that her husband and his family started to beat her. She shows me the scars on her body.
You can see my head. Here is one brick.
Much a break in your hair?
Yeah.
Why? Because of the beads?
Yeah, I have that. Yeah. You can feel it. Here.
There's a lump on her skull. It indents slightly when you touch it. It's probably the size of a toonie. I wonder, what did he do to her?
That's from your husband?
Yeah. He pushed me like this side of the wall.
She says the abuse continued for years and she was treated like a servant in the house. Marwa says they constantly fought. Then, after allegedly beating her and robbing her of a chance to come to Canada, Marwa's husband saw no use for her anymore, so he divorced her. Marwa had nowhere to go, so she fled to Pakistan to get away from her husband's controlling family. Meanwhile, in Canada, Marwa's sister, Asma, has been desperately trying to bring her here.
When I was pregnant for my first baby, I was pregnant of 8 months, but I was knocking every doors.
She says she went from churches to mosques, refugee settlement organizations to Afghan women's collectives, begging for a private sponsor. Everyone was already helping Afghans. They just couldn't take on any more.
I cried for them just because I was asking for helping my sister. And they told me that we can't do anything else. There are many people in the waiting list who are like a family of 10 or 15. We are helping them. So I just kindly asked them that it's only one person. You have to help her.
Asma also reached out to Immigration and Refugee Citizenship Canada, or IRCC, multiple times, pleading her sister's case.
More than like 10 or 20 times. And anytime when I call or send an email to IRCC and asking for the update, they are telling me, no, the file is closed.
Asma shows me the scores of emails she has sent to her local MP's office. He confirms Marwa's original visa file is no more. As a Hail Mary, Asma even tried applying for a visitor visa for her sister. But last month, that was rejected. All the while, Marwa is spiraling in Pakistan.
My life is too much bad and I don't want to be alive. So I try 3 times for...
She's tried for suicide.
For suicide. I tried for 3 times for suicide, but still I am alive.
You tried to kill yourself.
Yeah. I can't do it anymore. Every day I try to find that way that I kill myself. I don't know how I kill myself. I just eat medicine and medicine, medicine. That. Now I am alive just for my mother. She's a heart patient. I can't give her too much more attention. No, choke, choke.
Abbas?
Oh, Abbas. Yes.
I know Marwa's mom, Jamila, cooks to keep herself busy. She's hard at work in her small Canadian kitchen. She doesn't speak English, so her eldest daughter, Asma, is translating. As I study her face, I realize she has the same almond-shaped eyes as Marwa.
Easy.
Can I ask, what is Marwa's favorite food?
Marwa's favorite food.
Marwa likes. Mostly she was eating